galley crew and steward, of course. And our studio guests this afternoon, we have with us attorney, Mr. Steve Mikefield. Steve, welcome.
Thank you. Well, thank you.
And also Mr. Ivan Fyington. Ivan, welcome.
Welcome, you listeners.
Okay, and Steve, if you pull your mic in a little closer, or pull in a little closer to the mic and Ivan there. Okay, and hoping to join us by phone a little later, we'll have Kim Jackson and Mr. Rupert Ebanks, and hopefully we'll be able to connect up with Mr. Ackerman, Rupert Ackerman, that is. And, of course, we'll be connecting up also with Mr. Ferdinand Seymour, one of the cooks that... a long time steward in the steward department, and we'll also have a segment in by Mr. Will Jackson, who, you know, is one of the famous cooks of the Cayman Islands. Okay. The Cayman Islands Maritime Heritage Series is being brought to you by the Maritime Authority of the Cayman Islands, the Andro Group, Thompson Shipping, and the Port Authority of the Cayman Islands. And our thanks to those good folks. Our thanks to those good folks. Let's see, we got some telephones ringing around here, which we hopefully will be able to control, for their participation in helping to bring us this program. We also want to welcome all those online listeners all over, wherever you are. Welcome to Cayman Islands Maritime Heritage. We know we got listeners all up and down the, I guess you could say, the Gulf Coast and Florida. So, welcome. Gentlemen, our Maritime Heritage, it is rich, dynamic, and encompassing. It is that heritage that over the years have made such a vast contribution to the Cayman Islands we now have today. And of course, the main element in that heritage is our seafarers, and we'll be hearing from quite a number of them this afternoon, as we mentioned earlier. Now, Steve, Mr. Mikefield, you went to sea, you then came ashore, and I believe you went back to school, college, and became a lawyer. And it's made quite a great contribution here in our local community. But you started at sea. So let's start out with you in the middle of Georgetown. I'm somewhere along the line in our conversation over the years, I think I heard you refer to this. You got your passport in your back pocket, and you're looking to get a ship. Just tell us a little bit about, you know, and you were, what, 16, 17 years old at that time.
Well, I got my passport when I was 16, yes, and some of the people who were my heroes at the time were like Ivan Farrington and a guy called Dickie. They had gone to sea before me, and they used to come back with all the beautiful clothes. I remember I used to always be jealous of them coming to Georgetown with their beautiful khaki clothes and their short sleeve shirts and their Elvis Presley jackets and things like that.
Did they have a high pressure cap?
And well, they never wear high pressure caps on those days. But Ivan, especially the first time I saw people wearing the pockets on their legs, just like they do in the military, was Ivan Farrington wearing them and the beautiful sneakers, the beautiful loafers with the beautiful socks. And I always want to be like that too. So I got my passport early and decided to go down. So whenever I heard that they had a call coming in, I used to go down to Mr. Bertipandon's office and stand around. But I was really skinny, really, really skinny, really slim and skinny. You could never get to the front of the place. So sometimes I'd sneak in and get to the glass window and peep in and watch them while they were interviewing the men. And sometimes, you know, the recruiters would be looking through the window, look at you, but they never call you inside. That happened to me several times. I was so disappointed. But the first trip I got was, I decided with my friend and Roland Ebanks, we decided to go down there this day. We heard that a call had come in for men. And we went down there this day, and we really pressed. We would not leave the glass window looking inside of Mr. Birdie's office. And I remember the guy pointed to us, and they called us inside. And we went in, and he says to me, how old are you, son? I says, 16 going on 17. And says to me, have you been to sea before? He says, no. And he asked, would you like to go? And I says, sir, I says, I got my passport ready. And they told us, they would let us know. And in a few days, we were home, and we heard to say we got a call from Ms. Gwen. And they, of course, took us down to the shipping place and told us, yeah, we were going to sea. And they sent us up to the old hospital to get the physical test. That was the most frightening thing to get this test, because the people said, "Boy, you know, you're going to take this X-ray," and I didn't know what the X-ray was and all that stuff. And you have to take a urine test and things like that, whatnot. A lot of people didn't pass it. And anyway, we went up there and we got the physical, and we came back down with the results to Miss Gwen, and we heard that we were leaving. That we were going with these men, and the company that recruited me first was Keystone Shipping Company out of Philadelphia, and
still around, I believe they're still operating some ships.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I remember now trying to get a suit, and my mother went around looking for the proper clothes for me to wear, because this is like January and it's cold in America. And we got a suit, my first full suit that I wore, got it. Oh, and we were up at the old airport and waiting for the flight to leave. And my mother, I'd never forget, my mother asked this man from West Bethel, says, "Look after my son for me." And says, you take care of him. And she told me, says, "Anything this man tell you to do, you do it." And that was deceased Mr. Henry Bush. And he was my guardian on the ship while I was there. And some of my friends were on the ship was Selkirk Watler and this guy called Douglas that sails the Instant Barrier. You know, he was there too, and Captain Curry and this guy Mr. Albury and Mr. Ackerman from West Bay, and it was Mr. Carter from Bordentown, and a whole lot of great men, and you felt so small. Because you all these men were like giants to you on the ship, you know. They had been to sea before, and you were like the boy on the ship. I started out as a BR, the bedroom steward, looking after all the officers' mess and all officers' bedrooms and things like that, and the mess and handing out the soaps and the toothpaste and all that sort of stuff from the place. So I had a lot of freedom.
Which, if I could just interrupt you, which is not that much different as you relate it to modern day, as in the hospitality industry.
That's right. That's right.
And we seem to not be able to get people to work in the hospitality industry. Yet, gentle guys in your age group, in your era, Ivan, that's basically where we started it.
That was a great job. And let me tell you, some of those officers. I had a captain, and every morning you had to shine all the fixtures on the basins and things like that. You had to shine them. You had to shine the mirrors. You had to shine everything. You had to keep the floor clean. I mean, he would come and inspect.
That's the discipline in going to sea.
Yes, that's right.
Well, let's. Ivan, you want to peek in here and give us a little bit? I know you. I believe you went. You first started out in Mosquito Key.
Yeah, I first started in Muskegee in 1952. I was working at the airport when they were building that, but I decided to go to Muskegee and I picked some good men to go with, Uncle Oskin, Uncle Martin, and Mr. Aaron Purry. And I went out there, and we, from King Keys, we took Mr. Aaron's square stern boat and went to Corn Island. And that's where I really started out. And I came home then, and I got a job at National Bulk Carriers. And we went to Jacksonville and joined a T2 tanker by the name of the Kaposia, and went around South America. And I was Galliman. Steve Friend, Mr. Henry Bush, was second cook. And Mike Norman was chief cook.
Quite a crew, quite a crew there.
Yeah, so I started with them, and a lot of other ones down there. Mr. Will Purry was bosun. Orrin McLaughlin was on there. My brother Leek was on there. And Harold Parchment and Carly E. Banks.
All came on crew.
We joined her in Jacksonville. And I got sick on it, had left my appendix in Rio Grande do Sul in Brazil. Came home and wasn't home too long. They sent me to Japan to bring out the Commonwealth. Before I left the Kaposha, I got promoted to second cook. So next trip then, I brought a Cornwell as BR, and I stayed with it from the galley then. I went on deck, and I sailed on deck all the time.
But no, you say you were second cook, and then you took a job with BR. That was a kind of demotion.
Yes, sir. But first thing came up, we went. And but I took anything not to get back in the galley too, because that first trip had me shook up with that.
Well, I believe we've got Mr. Rupert E. Banks on the line now, and Rupert goes way back. I think he's before you out around the Keys there. Rupert, are you there? Hello.
Hear me?
Certainly can. How are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing well. Yep. How are you?
Fairly good. I guess you've been listening. We got Steve, Mr.
Yeah,
Steve.
Yeah, I heard Steve and Ivan.
Yeah, and we're just kind of going over, you know, a little bit of the history of you guys going out to sea. And I know, when did you start out going to sea?
November 1948.
No, Ivan, I guess he was 2-3 years ahead of you.
Mm-hmm. Mosquito Key.
Yeah, and your first trip, I believe, was out to Mosquito Key.
Yeah. I went out with Captain Will Powery, and the boat that was owned by Captain Mike Sherry. I stayed out for 6 months. We went, I guess I went over that is to Diamond Spot.
Yeah.
Where we lived in a bar in a hut from November till next year, April, we came home.
So that was about, 5 months, 5-6 months?
Yeah, six months.
Living in a hut with no floor, sand floor?
Yeah, we did have all we had was a water floor.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, we had our old sand trash bed.
You lodge in?
So, it was kind of rough, but we made it.
Now, you know, I'm talking with these three guys here, and I think we all, most of our listeners know that they all came ashore and made great contributions to our society. Mr. Mike Field is an attorney here in the Cayman Islands, been an attorney for quite a number of years. Ivan, of course, runs his own business, and I think he might have worked in the hospitality industry for a little while.
Yes, and I came home, and I was chef at the Royal Palms Hotel, and I went my bought a coffee truck. Now you go run the construction sites. At the time, the high school now had no canteen. I operated that till 87, and I started a business down in hell.
Yep.
But in 61, I took a course on the Chicago schools of restaurants. So when I got in the restaurant business, I knew some little about it.
And I think I brought this up to point out how you know, determined and industrious these gentlemen was, of course. And you yourself, Rupert, you came ashore and you were, I believe, an immigration officer for quite a number of years.
Yeah, but that wasn't until I made another
detour.
I made another 5 trips to Mosquito Key.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. I got caught in the heaviest. Well, they called the Northwest Gale. You may remember the year that, I think it was 53, when Carsey and his crew were lost out there.
I think we all remember that. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Well, I was in that all day. And we made little Mosquito Key just after the sunset. We remained there for the night in that boat with wet nets and half full of water, and the next day we went to the Key. By that time, we were starving, really, but we couldn't really eat anything because the roof of our mouth was so sore that...
From the salt and wind.
Yeah, it was almost impossible to eat anything. And then, I think that was my... Yeah, that was my last trip to the Mosquito Keys. Then I came home, and then we started the job of chewing up around Mr. Bordepano's office.
which Steve was making making reference to just a little while ago.
Yeah, we did that for till 55 before we got a ship. And our first ship was the old Ulysses, the dirtiest ship that ran into Portland, Maine. She was one of the fastest, I believe, that was on the water at the time. And so the first trip we made, we got caught in a heavy northwester going up to Portland, Maine. We were in the Hatteras area. And it is only God's mercy why we didn't sink.
Well, that's some dangerous waters up around Cape Hatteras.
Yeah, the Seaman's Graveyard.
Yes, yes.
We hit this northwester at 3:10 in the morning. She hit a sea that it went down in her engine room. The first time I ever seen, and I guess most Caymanians that sail know about the man known as Sundermeyer. The calmest man that I ever seen, I believe, in my life. But that was one time I saw him angry. And he woke everybody on the ship. And he went down in the engine room. And the old Ulysses was, as I said, she was a fast one. She was turning 102, and he cut her down to 75, and he told the engineer that was on watch, which was a guy from Belize, that if the captain called for more speed, call him. 8 o'clock that morning, he rung her up again, and the chief came down and cut her down to 70. We went into Portland, Maine. You couldn't see her forecastle head for ice. Her chain rails, lifeboats, and everything was broke down. Then we ran ashore. To make matters worse, bust a forward bunker tank. And we were there 3 days with steam on deck on the pipeline. Working around the clock, trying to get that bunker transferred from forward bunker tank to the aft one. We were there and end up going to the bunker station to get it out. It was 17 below zero. 2-3 of our crew got frostbitten on that trip. And then, After coming home from the Ulysses, I went back on the old chief, which was a different cattle of fish altogether. She was running from Mobile to Puerto Ordaz, Venezuela.
Well, Rupert, what are some of the main ports that you visited during your time at sea?
Port La Cruz, Puerto Ordaz, Port Amboy, Japan, different ports in the United States, Baltimore, Philadelphia, Mobile, and then we used
well, to... Well, let's hear from Steve here. Steve, I know you, I think you were very widely traveled all over the world. What are some of the main ports or main countries you visited?
Well, the first port I went to was Curacao, and I went to Bergen, Oslo, and went to a little town up in Norway in the Arctic Circle called Kristiansand. It was one of the farthest places I went. We went to Amsterdam, Holland, Italy, Naples, to the Persian Gulf several times, Banapashore, to...
South America,
to Rio de Janeiro, Rio Grande do Sul, up the Orinoco River, the same as Mr. Rupert. running from Mobile to South America with iron ore or chief in the ore transport, and running to from the Persian Gulf to Marcus Hook and Philadelphia and New Jersey, and into New York, and those are some of the places that I travel to.
Okay, Ivan, how about you?
I will be each of me tell you where I now went. I now went to Russia.
No.
I did went as far as Aqaba, Jordan in 1966 to carry ammunition for the Arabs. We loaded ammunition in North Carolina and took it up to Aqaba, Jordan. And when the ship docked up, I was very frightened because I could see the Israelites right on the other side. Talking to a guard on the dock, said, "Don't worry about it. Say, Uncle Sam is selling them or giving them ammunition too. Selling all two sides of ammunition to fight war." And we were there 32 days discharging that ammunition. And I pulled away from the dock about 2 hours when I heard them jets going over. The Israelites just gave us time to pull away from the dock, and they went burn the same ammunition we carried.
And that was, you remember what year that was?
That was 1966.
Did you sail during the Vietnam War?
No, Vietnam War was just about over when I started. I started with National Book in 72. I was Muscatine when the Vietnam War was going on. Oh, Vietnam War, yes. Yeah, yeah. I thought you were talking about Korean War. Yeah. I sailed during that time.
Because I also made a couple of trips to Alexandria, Egypt, and to Senegal in West Africa.
So very, very widely traveled. How important all those travels were to you guys, I mean, in your future endeavors. Now, Steve, you came ashore and went to school. I guess you spent, what, 6-7 years in school after you came ashore?
Yeah, I came ashore and I went to school in New York. You know, my first profession, I'm a dental technician. I went to New York College of Dental Technology, and I became a dental technician, and I came back to the island, but unfortunately, I couldn't get a job, and then that I went up to Jamaica, and I worked as a dental technician in Nuttall Hospital with my mentor, Dr. Marsh. I used to play cricket with him. I used to play cricket with Ivan, too. I was a good cricketer at the time. I used to be a fast bowler for Georgetown.
Yeah, I remember that.
Me and my friend Wybert Borden, watch a week we call him. You know, lives in Tampa.
And also remember I was there bowler nightmare.
That's right. and in Georgetown we used to go during the cricket season, we would go to West Bay area on Saturday. They'd come up Saturday and we never won a match in Georgetown. We never won a match. They intimidated us. We never won a match. And so Marsh has always told me, you need to get yourself a profession and things like that. So while I was at CEI, I did a correspondent course, and I got my matriculation by correspondence, and that got me into college in America. And then when I came back, I went to Nuttall Hospital, and I worked there for several years with him as a dental technician, and was also a doctor, a dentist in St. Thomas, Jamaica. Mm-hmm. I would go to on the weekends to St. Thomas as a doctor. I was Dr. Mark.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I didn't have any license. I mean, I'd be taking out teeth from Landuey all the way up to Moran Bay. Dr. Mark is coming tomorrow, next week. And after they start saying, well, this guy's so what happened to me is that I used to go down and drink for all the dentists drink too. A place called a Keg on Orange Street.
Yeah,
and the guy was saying to me, "Where did you go to school to be a dentist?" And I said, "Oh, Howard University." And he said, "Well, what year you went there?" So I figure out now if I say the years I went to see, you know, that we wouldn't find out. So I says, "Oh, 56, 57, 50." And he said, "Well, that's the same time I was at Howard. I didn't see you in my classes." So I left and I came to Cayman. Yeah, and then I finally went to Canada. And I went to Canada. I met a Canadian family who I was at the beach club too. I work at the beach club as a bar waiter. My friend Roland Ebanks was the head bartender, and I worked there. And I met this couple, and they invited me to Canada. And I went there. They were Mormons. I lived with a Mormon family for 5 years in Toronto.
Okay.
Yeah, I looked after their 12-year-old boys and their 8-year-old boys, And they said to me that they would like me to go back to school because I had a good memory. Because they heard me speaking one time when Mr. Armand Panton was running for election, and he had walked out of the house. He had resigned,
yes,
and then went back for a by-election.
Mm-hmm.
And I was speaking on his platform down in Cardinal Avenue, and this couple heard me speaking, and it said to me that I had some talent. And I went there, and I lived with them. And that is when I got the desire to get back into to school. So I took courses at night at York University. And when I got entrance to university, I went to Vancouver, to University of British Columbia. And I went there, and I did my 4 years, my bachelor's degree in 4 years, and then I got into law school and went there. And I was in law school there first year, and then I heard about a scholarship that they were giving to the Law Society in Cayman Islands. So I came down and applied for a Law Society scholarship. I got that, but it was not enough to keep me in school in Canada, because it was only like $1,000 a year. My tuition was quite more. So then I heard about the University of West Indies. I could get in there. And I didn't have to pay any money, because Cayman Islands was a contributor. So I went to UWI in second year in law school, and I spent 2 years there in Barbados, and I graduated there. And then when I graduated there, Cayman Islands had opted out of the treaty of the Caribbean Council of Legal Education, and I was with David Rich then. And Mr. Rich and I then couldn't go to Jamaica to do the bar exam, so the government, I came home, and I was clerk of the courts. And then and David was assistant clerk, and then the government recruited me permanently, and it was Gilbert McLean that recruited me for the government, and Mr. Jim persuaded me to come into the civil service, and they sent me up to England to do the bar exams, and I was up there in London, and when I came back and I was Crown Counsel, I was working on the third floor in a glass house. Until I left government, even on my own.
You know, looking back now, and you've accomplished quite a lot in your life, and just describing a little bit of how you went about it here. How important was the discipline of going to sea in what you pursued later?
I think the discipline was before sea, because remember most every seaman that I've went with at my age and time were all Boy Scouts. We were all in the Boy Scouts, West Bay Troop, Georgetown Troop, Northside Troop, Bottomtown Troop, and we went to camps, and the camps were put on by the scout leaders specifically to train us on how to be seamen. Because when we went to camps, all of the camps were laid up like ships. We hold watches as if we were on ship.
Mm-hmm.
We knew when we went on the ship what to do. And we had that discipline from then. So when we went to sea, not only did the discipline continue, but we had the discipline of the older men. We were like we were boys on the ship. I mean, we had a lot of adventure, but we always had to look up to the older men who were on the ship. And it's a great discipline for me and for other men, because I remember I was a fighter. I was like a fighting cowboy. I mean, you said, "Pissy, you can beat Steve McQueen. Let's get it on." I mean, if the guy beat me up, that's fine. I remember the worst beating I got was at a garden party in Bordentown one night. You know, and I went there to dance with a girl, and the guy says, "No, he's not dancing." And I insisted. But I saw a big fist coming to my forehead, and that was it. And the whole Georgetown was fighting against the Bordentowners that night. I mean, I went on the ship. I was on the Bull Trader. Ivan was there too.
Yes, I was.
Yes,
there.
And my boss was Marvin Ryan, who's deceased now, from Kim and Brock and Arlen Tatum. And when I went on there, he said, "I hear you, Macfield." He says, "Are you from Georgetown? I hear you're a bad man." But he says, "I'm going to wait till you get to the Persian Gulf, and I'm going to see how bad you are." So I started asking these guys, "What's this Persian Gulf?" They wouldn't tell me. I said, "Well, you'll see when you get up there. You know, you'll see." So boy, all of the some 22 days going up there I was in agony. When I got up there, in the morning, got up there, it's 132 degrees in the shade. The sun blowing all over. You got to close up all the portholes, and you're eating salt tablets all day to keep alive. And he says, "Okay, Maxfield, you and Garfield, and then we're going to the engine room this morning." So I figure, how we can't work? So he says, "Well, we're going to paint the boilers." He said we're going to pin the boilers, and we had put on all these coveralls and this silver paint, and repainting the boilers with this silver paint. And every time you touch the paintbrush onto the surface, the paintbrush would fry. And we were sweating. We had to be eating salt tablets all along and drinking water.
But you showed him you were tough.
That's right. And we toughed it out. And after we finished that, he said, MacDill, he says, you made it as a man. And he said, you can come to my cabin now. And because every evening, him and Ryan and Tatum used to play guitar in there and sing country and western songs, and he says that you're invited enough to come to our cabin. You can come in like as if you're a man. So that was a great accomplishment for me to get into Marvin Ryan's cabin to be with those men.
Get the real songs.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, but that was on there.
That's right. Yeah.
Ryan, you'd play the guitar.
That's right. That's right.
Once I Love You, Baby.
Yes.
You feel me to the bone.
That's right.
I must admit I wanted only you.
Yeah. Okay, gentlemen. Yeah. That old clock is moving along with us. Right here, we've got to tell you that the Cayman Islands Maritime Heritage Series of programs is being brought to you by the Andro Group. The Andro Group, of course, bringing the future of service to their customers. You can call Andro at 949-8000, or you can log on to their webpage at www.andro.com.